Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans, not just around the world, but here in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, the home of F101. If you're hearing my voice, it can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. Thank you for joining us. It is there are two races left in the 2024 season. It is a triple header back to back to back. It is going to be a very busy couple of weeks. Let's get right into it. We are at the Qatar Grand Prix. It is the final sprint weekend of the season. And I don't know about you, but thank Christ it is the last sprint weekend. No changes coming for the 2025 season or 2026 to the sprint format. Unfortunately, I do kind of hope they do get rid of the sprint format. It's a much ado about nothing. It just gets drivers pissy. It just gets cars wrecked, more mileage, more tires, more parts. And it's not exactly like the best, you know, it's a couple of points here and there. It's 8 points if you win, 1 point if you get last, still one more point for the fastest lap. It is extra points. It does make it slightly more exciting when it's a close season like we have now. But I think it's one of those issues that they just need to stop while they're ahead. We got the novelty. It was fun for a season or two, and now it is just time to move on. Let's get right into it. The Qatar Grand Prix, a couple of special things that you need to take note. The track itself, really good track, couple of straightaways, a lot of turns, kind of meant more for GP motorcycle racing than Formula One racing. It's a very much a multi-use track, which is great. The only downside to where it is that the walls around the track itself, they're not that high. Qatar is also known for really high winds, especially in some certain parts of the track, which means that no matter how rubbered in the track gets, when you've got F2, Porsche Super Series, GP, Formula One, the wind kicks up, not only takes all the marbles off as well, but blows sand onto the track. This is what these guys had to deal with this weekend. It was nothing but slight winds and sand, which means no matter how much you ran, they also had Formula One Academy this weekend on the same track. You can get three different organizations on back to back to back for the entire weekend, and it's still not properly rubbered in. A lot of track violations, a lot of time deletions, a lot of oversteering, understeering. Not because these guys don't know what they're doing, not because the wind is just that fierce. It's because there's so much sand on the track, no matter how hard they try, there's not a whole lot of grip. So we're going to get right into it. Saturday, sprint qualifying one, they only had 1 hour of research and development for full practice time, as usual for a sprint weekend. It was okay at best. Not a lot of fast track times. Again, it's all because of the wind. There was a couple of gusts from turn, I think it was 6 through 12. Not super, super hard, but just enough to mess with these cars. They are very, very sensitive when it comes to wind gusts because of their aerodynamic setup. So it did make things a little more interesting than they needed to be. Slightly slower track times than anybody else was expecting. And a couple of names right out of the bat that we weren't quite expecting to be out in first qualifying. First qualifying, we're going to go from 20th to 16th. Colapinto is 20th, Perez 19th, Zhou Guanyu 18th, Ocon 17th, Yuki Tsunoda 16th. Perez and Ocon automatically, because of their really bad start positions in sprint qualifying, it turned into more of a research and development section. They will be starting from the pit lanes. They changed their entire setup. It was kind of like, okay, this is definitely not working. You guys are slow. You've almost crashed a couple times, a couple of spinouts almost. So let's just change it up. Let's see what we can get and salvage from the weekend itself. Sprint qualifying two, again, same thing. Slightly hot, lower winds, still a ton of sand on the track. Not enough for a safety issue because they're not going to yellow flag it. But again, it's just not, it's not what it needs to be. It's not where their speed needs to be, not where their traction needs to be, which just ends up being a very, very slow track time. We're going to go from 15th to 11th. Kevin Magnussen, 15th. Lance Stroll, 14th. Bottas, 13th. Alex Albon was 12th. Fernando Alonso, 11th. Stroll and Fernando Alonso, they're fighting the car again. Week in, week out, back-to-back weekends. They never really have a good weekend with this car. The car is so far behind where they should be at this point in the season. They should be looking towards 2025, looking to improve things, looking to be at the upper end of the middle section of the teams, trying to get some points back. It's not happening with this car. It's kind of like, I don't want to say they've given up on the car at this point. At least Stroll isn't saying anything. Fernando, on the other hand, he's been around long enough that he can kind of voice his opinion and people listen to it. Well, he has definitely stated that the car is definitely not worth their time at this point, that they really need to start fixing things now if they're going to be competitive at all in the 2025 season. He fully understands that this season is absolutely gone and pooched, which, I mean, to be totally fair, it's kind of what has happened. He has recognized the fact that he's not the issue. He has realized that he himself, as the driver, being the oldest driver on the grid, he is not the issue. It's the car that's the issue. He has signed for another couple of years with Aston Martin, so they also agree on that section. But they need to do something with this car, definitely. Cold weather, hot weather, windy, rainy, it doesn't matter. The Aston Martin is barely hanging on to points, position, track time, track position, aerodynamic efficiency, all of this and above. It is just a horrible, horrible car for the 2024 season. SQ3, wind died down. Track still not where it needs to be. It is definitely the theme of the weekend. It was the same issue for F2, for F1 Academy, for the Formula One guys. Like, everybody that raced this weekend, it was the same thing. The wind was just gusty enough where it blew more sand onto the track than it needed to, which means they don't have the traction that they need to. But top 10, here we go. Not a whole bunch of surprises. You can see where these guys, some people need the points, some guys don't want the points. And at some point, they're just trying to get through the season and make sure they don't wreck the car any faster or any worse than they absolutely need to. They want to be safe out there. They want to get the points, and this is how they do it. Let's go through the top 10. SQ3, Liam Lawson in 10th, Hülkenberg in 9th, Pierre Gasly in 8th, Hamilton in 7th, Verstappen in 6th, Leclerc in 5th, Sainz in 4th, Piastri in 3rd, Russell in 2nd, and Norris in 1st. Another really fast weekend for Russell and for Norris. These are the guys that need the points for the Constructors' Championships. Norris is also at this point, he needs to be careful that he's starting to lose a little bit of ground to Leclerc when it comes to the Drivers' Championships as well. Obviously, we all know that Max clinched it last week, but 2nd, 3rd, and 4th are kind of still up for grabs, and they still want that sponsorship money, and it still shows that you are being a very, you know, not respectful driver, but you're still worth your weight, that they're paying you, that you're still worth keeping around. So 2nd and 3rd is still very important, not only in the drivers, but in the constructors as well. But as I said before, if you look back, like number 6, Max, and 7 for Hamilton, they both know, they've been around long enough to know that it's a couple of points here, it's a couple of points there. Do they personally really need them? Not really. Does the team just need them to finish in the top 8 for more points? Absolutely. It looked like they were taking it easier. It looked like they were just going through the motions. They know what they're going to get for the qualifying. They know what they're going to get for the sprint. Qatar is not exactly known for a high pass area. There's only a couple of places that you can pass. So if you get into qualifying and it's a reasonably decent spot, chances are pretty good you're going to finish in the same spot you started. So with all that being said, how did the sprint race actually go? Well, it's only 19 laps just because the track is so big. Again, it's a little bit windy overnight. The track was rubbered in, kind of. Now it really wasn't. So the start itself is going to be the most important when it comes to the Qatar Grand Prix. Like I said, because of all the turns, it's a lot more swooping than most F1 drivers would like. Again, it's set up more for GP racing, which is motorcycle racing. And there's only one realistically good spot for them to pass, whether it's on DRS or just trying to get out of the way for a blue flag, something along that line. So it really depends on how your start is pretty much where you're going to end up. With 19 laps, you do not need to do a pit stop. Even the softest tires are going to go about 25 laps on this track. So no one was in need of an extra pit stop. Great start by Piastri, passes Russell right off the bat. It seems to be the trend lately. Whoever starts on pole doesn't necessarily have the best start, whether it's in a sprint race or whether it's in an actual Grand Prix. Again, Russell, he's on the ball. His car is reacting and is feeling very, very comfortable for the end of the season. Mercedes needs as many points as they can possibly get. As long as Russell can stay consistent, he's definitely going to give McLaren a run for their money. He's potentially going to take some points away from them. People that didn't have a fantastic start, Liam Lawson, he lost 7 spots. He went from 10th to 17th just off the start. This shows you, one, the level of traction that was non-existent, and two, just how important nowadays on a track like Qatar or some places in Spa or even Monaco, where there's not a lot of room to pass. So you absolutely have that rock and start. You absolutely have to have it. Some of the rookies are learning this the hard way. Some of the veterans are finally being able to tune into the cars almost in time for the cars to change. But hey, it is that type of game. Now, as this race goes on, one thing is starting to become a little evident. Now, McLaren may not have the best start in the world. Both Piastri and Norris are not exactly known for their lightning quick, consistent starts. Sometimes they're really good off pole, sometimes they're really not. Mercedes, on the other hand, seems to be a little bit more consistent with their starts. They seem to be really, really good off the start, but then the condition of the car, the endurance of the car itself, hasn't really been there the last couple of races. The lighter the car gets, the better it handles, but that's not necessarily helpful for them at the beginning of the race. 19 laps for a sprint race still means you're carrying a certain amount of weight. The cars kind of need to warm up. They need to get going. They need to feel that rhythm. By the time you do that, generally 19 laps have kind of been passed by already. Perfect example again, Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. It's one of those, they played the team game. The cars are in the really good spot. They may not have the best start in the world, but they were managing to catch up to Russell. They were managing to pass Russell as well. The McLarens have a tendency to deal a little bit better. The car, the aerodynamics, and the stability are a little bit better in the wins that happen in the last two races. Qatar and Abu Dhabi do have a tendency to be a little bit on the windier side, but it's not like front to back. It's not a tailwind. It's not a headwind. It happens to be a side wind. So whatever McLaren has done, they are head and shoulders way above everybody else when it comes to the dealing with the wind, with the aerodynamics that they have. They definitely took advantage of that. Now, McLaren gets into a 1-2 position, which is fantastic. Norris is in first, Piastri's in second. They're playing the team game. They're getting the orders of Norris needs to slow down, let Piastri catch up. Norris is naturally faster on this track. He had better consistency. He had a better momentum. Still, team orders come in going, we need these points for constructors. You have to play as a team. So Lando Norris at one point like had to slow down to wait for Piastri to catch up. You can start to hear the frustration in Russell's voice. He knows what these guys are doing. The only reason why he's fucking cranky is because he's not up front with the McLarens. He's not in a team situation with Lewis Hamilton. They both finished in the top eight. They both got points, but there was at least a 3-point difference. Russell finished in third, spoiler alert. Hamilton finished in sixth. So they don't have that opportunity to play the team game where McLaren does. And they took full advantage of it. Now, we were expecting a Norris finish. He was faster than Piastri. He got all this stuff done. And then literally at the last, 100 meters, Norris slows down, lets Piastri pass. So Piastri technically takes the sprint win in Qatar. I think this was just to clear his conscience when they had to switch in Brazil, where Piastri was leading the entire way. Team orders, when it looked like Lando Norris could compete for the Drivers' Championship, they told him to switch up. Now the slate's clean. So realistically, Norris wins Qatar, Piastri wins Brazil. Now, as annoying as this may be for the commentators, it does take away a little bit of the win from Piastri going, because it was given to you just like Brazil was given to Lando Norris. As boring as it can be for commentators and for some fans, I think it's great. It's great team racing. It's proper team racing. It's helping each other out, where when you have two drivers that are butting heads, it's not effective for the team. There was some question marks if Piastri and Norris was going to be able to get along this season. It looks like that they will be able to for the foreseeable future. There was no team orders for Norris to let Piastri pass. In fact, their team orders were, or at least Norris's orders were, Do not let Piastri pass. Don't slow down. Don't put in jeopardy the extra point that you will get, because we need it for the constructors. And it can be, we've seen it time and time again, you try to help each other out and something happens and you both get passed and that team loses even more points. Norris knew what he was doing. He knew that he needed to do this to keep Piastri, you know, a friendly teammate. So all in all, I'm not that upset about it. Hopefully the fans and the teams aren't too upset about it either. I know Russell was pissy about it just because he knew he was getting played, but hey, sometimes, you know, you got to do what you got to do. I think it's the best thing they could have done. Team over competition. Once all things were said and done, here are your top eight for the sprint race, starting from eighth to first. Max Verstappen in eighth, Nico Hülkenberg in seventh. Hamilton ended up sixth, Leclerc in fifth, Carlos Sainz in fourth, George Russell in third, Lando Norris in second, and Oscar Piastri taking the win. Now, only a couple hours later, it is now time for qualifying. Parc Fermé rules are totally different in this concept, so they are able to change the setup for their cars. Building wins for qualifying 1, 2, and 3. The only good thing about that is that the direction of the wind actually kind of cleared the track. It cleared most of the dust off. Unfortunately, with the direction of the wind, it also cleared up any marbling they had from the previous races, the sprint from F2 and the F1 Academy as well. But with that being said, the wind was, like I said, it was a little bit in a better direction for the drivers. Unfortunately for them, when they did pick up the wind, they were heading down. It also caused a lot of track violations as well due to the wind. Now, track violations equal no lap time. What's a track violation? You see the white lines on either side of the road. All four wheels can only cross over that white line so many times before you get a deleted track time, which means you have to drive your car even more to get up to where you need to be. More driving means more wear and tear on the car, less traction from the tires. You wear down your tires faster. It's not exactly the best circumstance that you can run into. One team in particular was suffering from track violations the entire weekend. Unfortunately, that was for Aston Martin. Where their aerodynamic lineup is for the car, it is just, it's not there. Any kind of gust of wind, headwind, tailwind, sidewind, left, right, angle, doesn't matter. It throws them off course. By far, Fernando Alonso had the most track violations of the entire weekend from anybody in F2, 1, and the Academy. He was just not having a good weekend controlling the car. But this shows what kind of veteran he is. It's because he was still able to make it all the way up into Q3 and in the top 10. Spoiler alert. Let's go through Q1. Absolutely no drama. It was just a little slower than we had anticipated because of the wind, because of the traction, so on and so forth. Same story for the sprint qualifying sprint race that we had talked about, which is still the same story for F2 and the F1 Academy this weekend. Starting from 20th up to 16th, Esteban Ocon in 20th, Kalle Pinto in 19th, Nico Hülkenberg in 18th, Liam Lawson in 17th, Alex Albon in 16th. Another streak of Alex not exactly qualifying where he should. We know where Albon can take the car. We know where the direction path Williams is going. He should be up higher than this. It's the second weekend in a row. He can't even get out of Q1. Q2 comes in again. Tough time for handling for the cars. Yuki Tsunoda, Lance Stroll, Fernando Alonso again. More reported wind gusts. This time the wind is changing. It's more of a side gust this time. Yuki Tsunoda and Lance Stroll not doing very well in handling the cars. A lot of oversteers, no spin outs, no crashes, but you see that massive snap when they're hitting to a corner. That simple snap can cost them a half a second, depending on how big the snap is, depending on how severe it is and how many times it happens in a lap. You can easily lose up to 2.5 seconds per lap. Again, these guys, they're finally getting the track marbled in a little bit. It's going to be as good as it can be. Probably call it 30% rubbered in, maybe 45 at the absolute height of it in Q3. It's still slow lap times, but they're still doing as best as they can. Going from 15th to 11th, Lance Stroll in 15th, Yuki Tsunoda in 14th, Valtteri Bottas in 13th, Joe Guan Yu in 12th, Pierre Gasly in 11th. Some surprising names. I expected Gasly to be higher. I expected Bottas to be lower. I expected Yuki Tsunoda to be higher as well. Again, all due to the low grip and the high winds. Q3. Q3 was great all the way up until the very end, but we're going to cover that last. So, Fernando Alonso, makes it into Q3, makes it into eighth when everything is all said and done. It was, how do you want to put it? It was almost a miracle that he made it into eighth place as it is. He's going around. He's trying his best. He had so many track violations. Now, you don't get a penalty race day because of that. You just keep getting your lap time deleted. It came down to the last 3.5 minutes, and Fernando Alonso still didn't have a track time. He was going around. He was driving. He was doing his best. But the control of the car and the wind was just not with him this weekend. So it was literally a last dash event. He ends up getting a fantastic track time, ends up being Perez, ends up beating Kevin Magnussen for eighth spot. But it just goes to show how resilient he is. He's trying his damnedest. He's putting the car in the best spot that he absolutely could. You could hear him at the end of qualifying. He is just so mad, not necessarily at the team, at his engineers for doing their best, for tweaking the car and working with what they have. Just the frustration of the overall experience going like, guys, seriously, what is with this car? Why are we trying harder than we need to? Just the pure passion and frustration behind his voice was, you know, if it doesn't inspire you when you're on Aston Martin to do better, then I don't really know what will. Let's get into your top 10 right now for Q3, starting from 10th and going to first. Kevin Magnussen in 10th. Checo Perez, another pretty much useless weekend in 9th. Fernando Alonso in 8th. Carlos Sainz in 7th. Lewis Hamilton complaining a little bit about the stability of the car and the wind in 6th. Leclerc in 5th. Oscar Piastri in 4th. Lando Norris in 3rd. George Russell, now here's it. George Russell is in 2nd. And Max Verstappen ends up getting pole for Q3. 3 hours later, there's a reverse decision. George Russell, being the crybaby drama bitch that he is, complained to the stewards that Max was driving uncharacteristically, unnecessarily, and dangerously slow around whatever corner it was. Now, when there's a complaint like this, it is normally coming from a driver who is on a hot lap or just finishing their warm-up lap, about to start their hot lap for time in qualifying. That would make sense. They're both on an outlap. Neither of them are going for a fast track time, nor are they just going to warm up before they hit the finish line. Russell, plain and simple, is not paying attention. Max is going slow on a left to right corner on the inside, and then George Russell just ends up right fucking behind him for no reason. They're in the flattest race in the world, and George Russell complains, oh, that was super, super dangerous. So he complains to Mercedes. Mercedes complains to the stewards. They get called in later, and George Russell just whines and bitches like a little baby that, oh, this was unfair, and I didn't get the track position that I needed to. The stewards, being the pushovers that they are, give Max Verstappen. Now, it's totally up to the steward's discretion, all right? It can be a one spot, three spot, five spot, depending on how bad the situation is. They end up giving Max a one spot penalty, which reverses Russell and Verstappen. So all of a sudden, Verstappen's in second, Russell's in first. I'm sorry, George, if you got to bitch and whine and complain like a baby, like a spoiled little British brat that, oh my God, he was in his way, he was in my way, I didn't get this. He wasn't in your fucking way. You had to go off the racing line on not even a warm-up lap, not even a fast lap, just driving. But you know, if you bitch, whine, and complain enough, the stewards are a bunch of pushovers, you get the penalty, and yay, George is all happy. Max and Red Bull were absolutely pissed by this, as am I. There was absolutely no reason for this whatsoever. Look for Max Verstappen to be just taking it to George on race day. George better watch out, or karma's going to come back and bite him in the ass hard. Now that all the complaining is done, people are in their spots. The grid is set. Parc Fermé is definitely in effect. It is now officially race time. It is the Qatar Grand Prix. We are talking 57 laps, 16 turns, a distance of 5.4 kilometers per lap. Top speed, 344 kilometers an hour. Fastest lap, a 1:24 by none other than the four-time world champion Max Verstappen, set last year in 2023. The stage is set. Max is absolutely pissed. The race start was fast from everybody, and karma bit him hard, and rightfully so, in my opinion, except for George Russell. An absolutely horrible, horrible, horrible start from George Russell. Ends up dropping three spots right off the start. Max Verstappen absolutely blows by George into the lead. And that is how the first lap essentially ended. Safety car first lap. Nico Hülkenberg spun into Colapinto, which uninitially hit into Esteban Ocon. Both Colapinto and Esteban Ocon, a DNF. They ended up on the side of the track. Not a horrible spot to hit, but not exactly the best spot to stop either. Full safety car comes out. Absolutely 100%. It was not mayhem, but you knew it was going to happen. Going down to the first corner off the straight, everyone's flat out. Sixth, seventh, some guys even hit eighth gear before that first turn. You got to slow down. You got to warm up your tires as best as you possibly can before you make that right-hand to left-hand turn. Some guys made it, some guys didn't. Meanwhile, while all that was getting sorted out, Lewis Hamilton gets a 5-second penalty right off the bat for a false start. He absolutely knew it. This is one of these situations where it shows the maturity of the driver. 7-time world champion going, that's my bad, guys. He didn't go too far out of the box. He was in the box properly, but then he started to roll forward a little bit, and then he stopped, and then he went again. He absolutely knew what he did. No question there. 5-second penalty. We get everything sorted out. We're 5 laps in now. Liam Lawson makes contact with Valtteri Bottas. Lawson gets a 10-second penalty on top of that. Really, you know, kind of a not a good day for a whole lot of drivers. We've got 2 retirements already. Lap 7, Lance Stroll, 10-second penalty. Also gets a DNF after that. He had damage to his car. It was to the underside and to the side pods, which means you can't switch that out. It's just going to get progressively worse and worse over the race. They do want to save, you know, they want to save that car as much as possible. Once you stop at a certain point, you can repair things like that. But if you do continue to go, we've seen examples on the side of Checo Perez's car. He gets a hole in his side pod. By the time he's done the race, or by the time they finally retire the car, the hole is 5 times the size, and there's absolutely no saving it whatsoever. Track conditions after 4 days, it was windy overnight. Even with the F2 race, the F1 qualifying and sprint, this race plus F1 Academy, the wind picked up again. We'll call the track maybe 45 to 50% rubbered in at max. These guys, again, a lot of under and oversteer. Only a couple of spinouts because of that. Not as much dust on the track, which is good. But at the same time, not nearly as fast as it needed to be. Mercedes, fantastic. Moving on. Mercedes, again, fantastic start of the race. They were set up really, really well for the actual sprint race. Not quite set up where they needed to be for this actual, not for this actual full length race. 57 laps doesn't seem that much. I mean, if you're set up for 19, how much more tweaking can you need to do for 57? Apparently for Mercedes, quite a bit. They weren't, they weren't horrible by the end of the race, but they weren't exactly setting any kind of track times at all, period. Now, that was the best part of the race. That was the least confusing part of the race. All the way up to lap 30, everybody got into their rhythm. They're nicely spaced out. Leaders are leading. There's not a whole lot of passing. They're doing the best they can. Now, from laps 30 to 57, it was an absolutely 100% governing gong show. They have a new race director. This is his second race in a row. They've got new stewards. They generally have new stewards for every single race, but stewards who have done this job before. So the consistency is not really there all the time. But, like, my God, this was an absolute gong show. So there was, what? Because of all the bumping and grinding for the first 30 laps, Alex Albon unintentionally ends up losing a mirror off the side of his car. Now, you can drive with one mirror. It's not exactly, you get a 10-second penalty. It's not exactly amazing, but you can drive with one mirror. On lap 30, down the straight stretch, Alex Albon's mirror comes off the right-hand side of his car. It's just like 1 minute it's there, next second, totally gone. It ends up sitting just barely off the race line on the main stretch. Okay, so technically not on the race line and technically not in the way, but you have to think about any slow drivers that are about to get past, they have to pull over. They get a blue flag, you have to pull over, let the faster car pass. So that automatically puts them in the line of this mirror. It took them 4 laps. four laps for Valtteri Bottas to hit that mirror in that exact situation. He's going to get passed. He has to get out of the way. He's got nowhere to go except to run over this carbon fiber mirror. I don't know if any of you have either played or touched carbon fiber before, but when it breaks, it is like the most sharpest thing that man has ever created. It will go through anything. It is that sharp of an edge. So Valtteri Bottas hits it. It takes another four laps and two flat tires for them to call out a virtual safety flag and then bring out the safety car. This mirror is in hundreds of pieces. You've got Leclerc and Hamilton. It happened to be the life of the tire as well as where they were. They both end up getting flat tires. They end up making it to the pit lane, but there's debris all over the place. And it takes the stewards and the race director so fucking long, in my opinion, way, way, way too long for this to happen. Now, they can't go down the straight stretch, obviously, because it's dangerous, all this kind of fun stuff, because there's so much debris on the track. So what do they end up doing? They end up going through the pit lanes. Everybody still has to slow down going through the pit lanes. It's a safety factor. There's still guys getting tires put on. There's people around in general. You don't want to lose control. You don't want to crash and all that kind of fun stuff. Well, somebody kind of forgot to tell Lewis Hamilton that. So Lewis Hamilton is going through the pit lanes, and not only is he not happy for getting a flat tire, but also he gets an additional 10-second penalty for speeding through. Or it's not a 10-second penalty. He gets a drive-through penalty for speeding through the pit lanes. This is not exactly something that you want to add on top of that. Now, for those of you who don't know what a drive-through penalty is, that means on his, and he has to serve this in the next two laps. So he has to go around the circuit at the normal proper speed. And then what he has to do is he has to drive through the pit lane at the recorded, at the required speed. So now he's not getting tires, but he has to just drive through the pit lane at a reduced speed. Now, depending on where you are on the track, this can take away up to 25 seconds off your time, which means a lot of cars can pass you. But if you're in the right spot on the track and you've got enough gap between you and the next person, you can maybe lose one spot or just come out exactly where you were. But you have to hit, I think it's 60 kilometers an hour. Like, it's slow through that. Well, for Formula One, at least, it's slow through that area. So now he has to serve that within the next two laps of the safety car finishing up. But in the meantime, they also have to go through a lap and a half before they finish cleaning off one area, because when Valtteri hit that that side mirror, he was doing like almost 300K. It just disintegrated. So it takes him a lap and a half to get things figured out. It's just so ridiculous what happens with this situation. It should be clear and concise. This is what you do. This is the time frame that you need to do it. Get it done so the race can continue. So everything gets cleaned up. Everybody's happy, all hunky-dory. Off we go. Here we go again. Only 6.5 laps later, all of a sudden, there's another safety flag, another full car out. Lap 40. Unfortunately for this time, Nico Hülkenberg oversteering, doesn't hit anybody. Nobody hit him. It's just a slight oversteer again because the track is not fully rubbered in. It doesn't have the grip that it needs. Neither does the drivers. He ends up spinning off into the gravel. Now, Qatar has old school gravel sand traps. They're nice and deep. They're super fluffy. As soon as you hit there with any kind, like without any speed, you're going to get beached. He is stuck. He is out. Like literally 5 seconds later, before he is able to even almost get out of the car, Checo Perez pulls up next to him. He's got no drive whatsoever. Car totally dies on him. Another DNF for Checo as well. You got no drive? You can't drive the car. And he tried to get it started. He tried the Control-Alt-Delete. The whole nine yards, could not get the car started. So two guys, same lap, same spot. Unfortunately, two more DNFs, not able to finish the race. Now, whilst all this was happening, there was a bunch of yellow flags, there was a bunch of green flags. This had to go all the way back to when, which one was it? Just before Valtteri Bottas decided to smoke or unintentionally run over the mirror, there was a yellow flag. Now, Lando Norris is right behind Max Verstappen. He has been the entire race, right? So what ends up happening, and I don't know how Max saw this. I don't know how he figured this out. It's not exactly like he was staring at Lando Norris through his side mirrors, but he ends up asking his team, did Lando Norris end up easing up on that yellow flag? rule is yellow flag, safety car, anything, you're supposed to slow down. No matter how long or how quickly the yellow flag is out or the safety car is, you have to slow down to a very specific amount of speed for a certain amount of time. Somehow Max ended up picking up that Lando Norris did not slow down at all. He actually ended up accelerating through two more gears. You can see in the replay, yellow flag is out. He, I believe, is in sixth gear. He ends up going to seventh. He ends up hitting eighth gear. Like, he ends up accelerating instead of slowing down. Well, it didn't take the stewards very long to figure this out. He's got, now this seemed a little harsh to me, but totally within the realm of punishment for the stewards and for the race director. He ends up getting a 10-second drive-through penalty. So what this means is he has to, again, the next two laps, he goes into the pit lane, he goes all the way down, he goes into his pit stop just like he's going to get tires, but he has to sit there for 10 seconds and then he ends up leaving the pit lanes. Grand total time, if you're going in for a pit stop and you hit the 2-second mark, it's 22 seconds total from the time you enter the pit lane to the time you exit. Now, when you add on a 10-second penalty on top of that, ends up being about a 32-second penalty for Lando Norris. No argument whatsoever. To his credit, he knew he messed up. There was no argument from McLaren or anything like that. Was it a little bit harsh? They were saying it was, everyone agreed, it was a little extreme to be that heavy of a penalty for essentially not slowing down for about 150 meters. Like, he didn't hit anybody. He wasn't a dangerous move. He wasn't anywhere near Max. He took about a half a second out of Max's time. And in doing so, he got about a 32-second penalty. Now, I understand the reason why he got the penalty. Was it a little harsh in my opinion? Yes, absolutely. But it's a new race director. He wants to set his mark. It's his second race. The FIA came out afterwards and went, oh, well, he's super, you know, like it was a really intense weekend, back to backs, and just started making excuses for this guy. Most people don't know that this race director who got hired was the old, not old, but he was the race director of F2 this season. So essentially he got a promotion. So to use the excuse that it's a tiring weekend, he's still learning the ropes, is an absolute bullshit excuse. I think he was just a little inconsistent today, but Lando took it like a champ, 35-second penalty, and he's back off to the races. He ended up, like, 35 seconds took him to the very last, like 100% dead last. By the time the race was done, and it's a little spoiler alert, he did get back up into 10th spot, so he did earn a point. He ended up climbing, I believe it was 6 spots from the time of the penalty to the end of the race, and that was only about 12, maybe 13 laps left. Like, he was motoring. There was nobody, well, there was a lot of people in front of him, but he had nothing to lose at that point. He had on really good tires, brand new tires, and he just absolutely went for it. And just to round things out, because karma is all things equal, I really, really like this penalty on top of everything else that happened to him. George Russell gets a 5-second penalty for a safety car infringement. Now, what the infringement was, I still haven't been able to really find out. There's only a couple things that he would have done. He would have either been going way too fast, way, way, way too slow, or he passed somebody during the safety car. The only three things that would come to mind. They didn't specify on which one it was, but George Russell gets a point off his supercar license as well, and he gets a 5-second penalty. I'm sure he's still crying about it now a couple of days later because, you know, that's how boy George acts. So let's get into the top 10 of this race once everything was all said and done, once the dust had settled and the yellow flags were put away. These are your top 10 going from 10th to 1st, Lando Norris in 10th, Kevin Magnussen in 9th. It only took 23 races, goddammit, but Joe Guan Yu finally got points. He was in 11th. The first points for Kick Sauber the entire year. He also ended up getting driver of the day as well. Fernando Alonso in 7th. Carlos Sainz in 6th. Pierre Gasly in 5th. George Russell, even with his 5-second penalty, ends up in 4th. Serves you right. Piastri is in 3rd. Leclerc is in 2nd. And Max Verstappen wins the race. After he passed Russell before the first turn, he never, ever looked back. The gap between Verstappen and Leclerc ended up being about 2.5-3 seconds. So nothing too bad. It was still a fantastic race from everybody included. Drivers' championships, let's get into it right now. Max Verstappen has won the championship. He's at 429 points. Lando Norris is in second with 349 points. With Leclerc's second place win and Lando Norris's 10th place win, Leclerc is now officially only 8 points behind in third with 341 points. In fourth is Oscar Piastri with 291 points. Carlos Sainz is in fifth with 272 points. George Russell's in sixth with 235 points. Lewis Hamilton's in seventh with 211 points. Checo Perez is in eighth with 152 points. Fernando Alonso is in ninth with 68 points. And rounding out the top 10, Nico Hülkenberg with a rockin' 37 points. Constructors' Championships, it's going down to the very last race of the season. McLaren has in first with 640 points. Ferrari is in second with 619 points. Ferrari can still clinch the championship this weekend coming up in Abu Dhabi. In third is Red Bull with 581 points. Mercedes is in fourth with 446 points. Aston Martin's in fifth with 92 points. Alpine's in sixth with 59 points. Haas is in seventh with 54 points. VCAR is in eighth with 46 points. Williams is in ninth with 17 points. And Kicksalba, finally, they're still in dead last, but they have 4 points. A little bit of news coming up right now that I called it last week before this came out because it came out a couple hours after the race. Cadillac is in serious conversation with Daniel Ricciardo to be their first driver in the 2026 season. I really hope he signs for Cadillac 100%, as well as the last race in Abu Dhabi coming up December 6th to 8th. Alpine has officially replaced Esteban Ocon with Jack Doohan for the last race of the 2024 season. Just a massive fuck you from Alpine to Esteban Ocon. Ocon's been kind of low-key trashing the team for quite a while now. Is it unfortunate that he doesn't get to finish out the season as the driver before he ends his career at Alpine? Yes, absolutely. But at the same time, does he deserve to not get that last race because he's been trashing his team so much? 100% absolutely. I want to see what Jack Doohan can do for the last race of the season. It's a good race to come in at. The track is good. It's fast. It's at night. It shouldn't be too hot. It's a good way to essentially start Jack Doohan's 2025 season, is one last race for the rest of this season. Story of the race. I mean, we covered it. The race directors with the penalties, not super inconsistent. If when you look at it, you know, penalty by penalty, as just a little surprising that we saw this kind of penalty issued this late in the season, as well as the harshness of it as well. And like I said, the Constructors series is going right down to the last race. My prediction, who is going to win? I want to root for Ferrari. They haven't won it in ages, but neither has McLaren as well. All right, I'm going to go with Ferrari. I'm going to say that Ferrari is going to win the Constructors' Championships from the last race in Abu Dhabi in 2024. Speaking of Abu Dhabi, when is that race? It is December 6th through 8th. It is a non-sprint weekend, and the times are actually not that bad to watch this race. Weekend warm-up starts Thursday at 7:30 a.m. our time. Friday, full practice one is at 2:30 a.m. That's too early to get up. Full practice two is on Friday again at 6 a.m. Then the weekend kind of officially starts Saturday. Full practice three is at 3:30 a.m. Again, not watching that one. Qualifying is at 7 a.m. our time. And then we hit race day Sunday. Pre-race shows starts at 5 a.m. with the race itself at 6 a.m. It's going to be, in my opinion, an official nail biter. It's going to be super exciting because the Constructors' Championship is on the line. Will Mercedes get in the way? Will Red Bull have anything to say about it? I still think Ferrari's going to be able to pull it out last minute, and heartbreak for McLaren fans, unfortunately, for the 2024 season. But hey, that is just my opinion. I hope everybody tunes in for next weekend. And that officially wraps up the 2024 Qatar Grand Prix breakdown. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And as always, a massive thank you going out from everybody here at F101. If it wasn't for you guys listening, I would not be able to do this hobby. So thank you. Thank you very much. And until next time, keep the revs high and the wheels turning. I'll talk to you guys next time.